My name is Charles Hood, and I am a grateful, recovering Al-Anon. I really have got to have a few declaimers, I guess. I certainly don't speak for Al-Anon in a total way. I just my own story. And second of all, I like what Theda said last night about me just being the vessel and God being the voice. And I remembered that my vessel was a cracked pot. I've given some bad talks and not very many of them. I feel very grateful that there is an Al-Anon slot in your program. I feel very grateful. I never thought I would be that Al-Anon in that slot, however, in the years that we've come. It was very hard for us to get here. I remember how long it's been since I met Mickey and Jim. It's been years ago. And at the end of our conversation, Jim said, "We've got to get you up on the mountain." Well, it was many years from there that I finally came to my first retreat. I went down to Sumatonga and went once and spoke the next time. I think that's the first or second time I'd ever spoken. And I met some folks, I don't want to call any names, but George and Rose said, "We've got to get you up on the mountain." It was many years after that before I finally got an invitation. And I really sort of owe an amends to this group in that I really snuck in here. There's no doubt in my mind. A friend of mine had a little piece of paper, a little bitty piece of paper. And one day as he was walking out of a meeting and I was walking out of another meeting, he said, "Charles, can you and Theda go to this? I can't go to this." And I said, "Where?" And he said, "Mont Eagle." And I said, "Let me have it." And I filled that out, and a fellow named Grady just let me in here. I'm sure he inquired as, "Who are these hoods?" And but they let me in here, and I really have to admit, I snuck in here. And I had a suspicion I was sneaking here, too. It wasn't honest. It was I thought I was sneaking in here, but I really wanted to come up here that badly. And I really do want to thank y'all for letting me come, and I want to thank you for letting me talk as well. It's just a real privilege to be here. I really think you should call this amateur morning as well, particularly for me, because I don't do this very often. I would say about every couple of years or so I do this, and I get so frightened that it's just quite an experience for me. Theda always thinks I'm so calm, and I do a lot of talking, period, but it always gets me so excited that I have such a hard time sleeping and so on. And I guess now I've gotten your expectations so low, I'll be okay now. I really do feel, I even like the arrangement of having Theda go last night. I want you to know that's the first time I've ever heard her talk. She's asked me many times not to come because she didn't feel comfortable with me there. And of course I said that would be fine. You know, I can remember one time Jim at Sumatonga said, "I sure would like to hear Theda talk." And I was thinking, you know, I really would too. But I finally got to hear her talk, and I feel understood and loved already, because she told our story, and it was close to accurate. And I really feel like I love you. I thought about that. You know, it reminds me of my teenage high hormone years. I love you, and I don't even know your name, you know. But I do, and you're very special people to me. And this is a very special room in here. I like this room and feel comfortable in this room, and I feel comfortable with this crowd. I want to make another. I've got just so much business things. I'm going to get to my talk eventually. I want to tell you about travel expenses too. This is something that really I love. You've got a speaker chairperson here who's outstanding, and he has told me three or four times, and the ex chair speaker person also has told me they're going to pay my expenses. Well, we live 40 miles from here. And I've gone to all the trouble. We got pretty good gas mileage. I think they owe us, it's about $1.98. And I want my check on Saturday. And that was for two speakers, so I want half of that in my name. Well, now I want to be up front with this board, and you know, and I do want you to. I'm really wanting to compliment Milton for doing such a good job, and I understand the speaker tomorrow night. He's from pretty close to Memphis when I found out where Grand Junction was, and I'm worried that Milton went by and picked him up. But I haven't asked that yet, so we're just going to kind of coast along here. We all kind of came as a wagon train, but I want you to know these people are stewards of your money, and I can testify to that. A year or so ago, they talked about a couple from Murfreesboro that I dearly love were here, and they talked about that, and I just didn't realize the impact of it until I got my crack at it. I want to tell you a little bit about Al-Anon. I started to talk one time about, I didn't know what Al-Anon meant, and I knew it had to be something because all these organizations have letter names and they all mean something, and I was new and trying to figure it out, and I couldn't figure it out. I looked at it, and I knew if you were in the non-AA, it would be AA-non or something like that, and it was a wrong letter, and then I thought, well, these are the non-alcoholics, so it'd be Al-Anon, you know, and I couldn't figure that out, you know, and then some of them drank. Some of these Al-Anons drank, you know. I thought, boy, I'll tell you, I don't know how they got in this non-alcoholic organization, but I had the hardest time with those letters, and I can remember this one real embarrassing time. I'd been going for a couple of years, and this one newcomer sat next to me and whispered, you know, what does that mean? I said, you know, I really don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. We all knew those ought to be letters for something or the other. And, you know, I never have understood what that is. And then I got to reading all these books that people placed in my way about codependency, and I didn't understand that either. I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. And I didn't know how to title it or label it. I mean, I knew when I was doing it wrong, but I didn't know what to call that stuff, you know. And it was so vague, and I've had such a hard time. If behavior can be addiction, whatever I was addicted to doing it. And I just had an awful time trying to do that and figuring out how that all worked and so on. But I think the most wonderful thing is sort of like in the reading that you did, I recognized when I was doing something wrong and that I shouldn't be doing that, and that I did it a lot of the time, just almost continuously. You know, I was sort of a professional caretaker or something. You know, I could lose myself by taking care of somebody who was very needy. And, you know, I did that both as a doctor. I did it professionally and got paid for it, and then sometimes got paid for it. And then sometimes I did it for close family members. And I guess the best example of what it was like was, it was sort of like, I think Theda mentioned last night, she got very sick and nobody was there to take care of her. Our deal was that I certainly felt very inadequate and emotionally incomplete. And I remember telling this one guy I was emotionally illiterate, and he didn't understand that, but or maybe emotionally retarded would be a better term. But somewhere in there describes where I was emotionally. I was not intact, and I needed a wife who could help me emotionally get through life in some sort of way. I just wasn't complete. I wasn't even a good half, much less a whole. And so our deal that was unspoken, it didn't say this on the marriage license, was if you'll take care of me emotionally, I'll take care of you emotionally. So as I saw it, two inadequate people got together and said, let's try to struggle through this damn stuff. And she mentioned that we were a blended family. You know, we had her child and my children and then our child. And man, if that's blended, the blender was broken, I'll tell you. That was one of the roughest things I've ever tried in my life, and it was. I did this imagery one time. This guy was telling me about just paint a picture of what your family's like in disease. Well, we were all in a separate room. We weren't talking with each other. We were disjointed, or we were so far apart, and several people in the house were drinking and taking drugs. And I remember, one of the things I enjoyed about Theda's talk last night is I get a small opportunity at rebuttal. One of the things I heard was, nobody knew I was drinking. Well, I knew there were big gallon bottles of stuff all over the place, but I didn't know whether it was Theda or my stepson. And then there was another drinker in the family, which was Theda's grandmother. I mean, this is a lady who was sober till she got in her 70s and then started drinking heavily, and I thought she was drinking these gallons of vodka. And, you know, and no wonder, I didn't know who was responsible for what. You know, and when I really got mad at Theta or really upset, I would withdraw my emotional support, which is exactly what she said last night. And I would take off and go work and do anything. I had a full-time job and then also had a full-time hobby. I decided I wanted to be a farmer. I'd never farmed. I bought a tractor and bought a big old farm and started farming. And that I don't want to talk about that because I just want you to know how insane I was. And we also raised dogs. We raised a championship Shar Pei for 5 years. And the real twist on that is, again, I was an Al-Anon in the dog business. I was out saving this breed. This poor breed weren't doing very well. And we went out and we took this near extinct breed of dog. And we got into it up to our ears. I go to this one meeting in Tampa, Florida, and they ask that you list all of your addictions. Well, there's a point in there when I get through with the dogs and the gardens and the farms and the working and the rose bushes and all that. These folks either think I'm bragging or I'm the craziest guy in the whole room, you know. But I'm not really trying to win any awards. What I did was I took my compulsions and I would rotate them in sort of hopes that you wouldn't realize what I was into and into so heavily that you wouldn't know me. And I didn't fool nobody. You know, I didn't order one rose bush. I ordered 50. And then they all showed up on the same day and I had to go dig 50 holes, you know. But at any rate, as Theta said last night, I certainly could qualify as insane and involved with alcoholics without any question. I want to tell you a little bit. When the first session we had with the board on Thursday night, I used a word and I pronounced it higher power. That's a real clue right away that I am an authentic registered redneck. I am not only Southern, but I'm from the mountains, and I'm proud of it. But I am thoroughbred 100%. My folks came from very poor country. All of them hated to farm, and they just raised enough to live on. We never had a car, and I was the hero of that family. And none of them old good folks had ever gone to school, and they picked education for me. I wish they'd picked golf, you know, or even sex. I could have been a Billy Ray Cyrus or something, you know, like that. But they picked school. Of all the things they wanted me to do was go to school, you know, and I went to school, and man, I struggled. I mean, I struggled. It was awful. I've been in some fine institutions, and I've come out of there with just exhausted. And I went to them schools and I got them degrees. Man, I got more degrees than anybody in my family because they ain't got none, you know. I mean, you know, it wasn't hard. I could have quit a lot quicker than I could have. I almost overdid it. I wanted to stay in academic medicine so bad, but my family didn't want that for me. They really wanted me to come home. After I got through, they really wanted me to come home, and I came home. I used to think I had choices. You know, I thought I'd picked out my profession. I thought I'd picked out which category. I thought I'd picked out which school and which thing. I didn't have no choices. I was on automatic program, folks. I did exactly what them folks asked me to do to be the hero in that family. And I was an active participant. Let me tell you, man, it was a lot of activity. But that was my background and where I came from. And my name is Charles Edward. Charles was called Charlie. He was one of the neatest guys. He taught me more card tricks, drank all the time, missed many weeks at Goodyear in Gadsden, Alabama, working at the Goodyear plant, was drunk most holidays. I can remember the kisses on holidays were pretty sloppy. They didn't call him an alcoholic. That'd be a kind word for what they called him. Edward wasn't much different, but a little bit different. But out of all of that, you know, we certainly, both of my folks, neither one were drinkers. They were both teetotalers. And we grew up in a rather rigid, strict thing where you didn't do much wrong. But that's my background and where I came from. And I certainly spent a lot of time in, you know, wondering, feeling a lot of resentment towards being a doctor and being in medicine and, you know, just a lot of things. After you get through with all that, to sit down and figure out, well, what do I want to be when I grow up is kind of a sad note. You know, you've got all these years of education and so on. It's hard to abandon all that. But there's been many times I really would like to have abandoned all that. And I can tell you, I was a real unhappy camper. I never could find happiness in all this mess that I was going through. I was just getting sort of sicker and sicker and more compulsive. And it was my second marriage. I seemed to like to find women that were very needy. I even say sometimes that I can go in a room and find a future alcoholic, sort of like one of those, you know, those good bird dogs that just point to them, you know. It's not that I know so much, it's just that I'm attracted to them. The women that I'm attracted to are the ones that are going to have the problems, and you know that somehow or other it's going to work out where we're going to leave each other somewhere along the line. I really am glad that Theta decided to come this morning. The last time she came, she got burned and got real. Last time I did a talk, she really got upset. It really hurt her feelings and just felt real bad when I talked about some of the things that I saw that we went through and saw. And I'm so glad she decided to come. I think it's a good thing for us as couples. And that's one of the things I really appreciate, again, is that you let us both come up here and say how we saw it and so on. That really means a lot to me. That's a little bit about what happened and how things arrived and the fact that we were rather unhappy and it actually got worse from there. One of the things that went on truly, and I really almost reluctantly want to mention this, is that we used to play these stupid games that we played, and one of them was the suicide game, and it precipitated in our bottom. One of the things that Theta would do would be say, in sort of words, if you don't do this, I'm going to commit suicide. And it would kind of, then I would get upset and I wouldn't know what to do, and I would stay a while longer. And then when she would upset me, I'd say, well, if you don't do this, I'm going to leave you. And then she'd say, you're going to abandon me and I'm going to commit suicide. And if you can see this game going back and forth and back and forth, it went on, and we knew it, and we did it for years. And there were some elements in some of her story even last night about taking such big doses of Demerol, I think, were even suggestions that there was a little flirtation with this suicide thing. And one of the meanest things I ever did in my life, and I know Theta probably doesn't even remember this, but it was absolutely one of the meanest things. We were sitting up at Mentone, Alabama, up on the mountain and having a talk, and we had just fussed all the way back from Atlanta. And she gave me this, I'm going to commit suicide. And I said, Theta, I'm a doctor. If you need any help, let me know. And she said, she said something that I don't really want to repeat on tape right now, but anyway, it's very appropriate. And I don't recommend that. I know there are a lot of counselors in here, and some of you are just shaking your head in tears that I would do that. But I didn't hear about suicide for a while. But we had a real troubled relationship. Sometimes in Al-Anon, we'll be sitting in a meeting, and one of the people there will say, well, you know, I'm not sure this person has an alcohol problem. I believe they just have marital problems. Well, we certainly had marital problems and alcohol problems. And it got pretty rough for everybody. We all got fairly insaner. And we wound up as our bottom was that we somehow there got this manipulate, I'm sure, our teenage son into treatment. And he was there a week or so, and he turned Theta in. As if I've got a problem, man, she's really got a problem. And we were no longer closet alcoholics at that point, man. We were wide open alcoholics, you know, at that point. And so it wasn't long until Theta went through her suicide attempt, and she called nationally and got one of the religious stations to call, and they got the ambulance people to come out and get her. She wouldn't come out of the closet. My best friend went in and got her out. I didn't even know. She didn't even call me or want me involved at that point. I'm sure she thought that I had truly abandoned her at that point because I was at work. She just didn't disturb me. She just had her own crisis without me, and I guess she thought we'd have enough drama in our lives soon after that. And then she went to my local hospital. We only have one hospital in this little community, and there's not much anonymous in this town. Whether you're sick, well, sane, insane, there ain't much anonymous in Scottsboro, Alabama. You know, about the only real trick I ever threw them is I used to go to Al-Anon meetings, and they all thought I was going to AA, and they wanted to get me off the staff for a while, you know. But I never did tell them any different. I just kept going to my meetings. But at any rate, We got Theta, or my best friend, got her out of the closet some way or the other, and got her into the hospital, and boy, was that awful. She screamed and hollered and carried on, and I really shared a lot of the, this is a place where I work. I go there 7 days a week, sometimes two or three times a day, and the people that I work with, and we really had ourselves a laundry right there in the middle of the whole community, and it was awful. There'd be nurses come in, and she'd scream, you know, get out of my room, whatever. You know, it was really something. It was really a drama. It was first rate, and of course, she didn't know what she was doing, but it was rough. And then a few days later, a couple of days later, she talked him into going home, and I talked a friend of mine into trying to help me get her up to a hospital, and we got her up to a psychiatric hospital and got her admitted. And I love these talks about here I am, a poor alcoholic, and they got me on the mental ward. I love that. There's, you know, and I think that's so great that there's only one thing wrong with this. Our whole family should have been admitted to the mental ward. You know? That's the only thing wrong. There wasn't anything wrong with her being there. I am positive she needed to be there. There ain't nothing wrong with that, medically or any other way, personally. But the rest of us should have gone in, you know, and giving us a group rate or something the other. And her psychiatrist, after a few days, informed me. Now, I want you to get this picture. I got a teenage son in treatment in Decatur, Georgia, for drugs and alcohol. He's been there now about 2 weeks, and he's got another 2 weeks till he gets off pot. And I've got Theta bouncing off the wall up there and sort of incarcerated in a mental hospital up in Chattanooga, which was the other direction. She didn't want to use that other psychiatrist. And her psychiatrist looks at me in our first session and says, and after just a few minutes, it didn't take him long, he says, "You are the sickest one of all." And after short order, he told me I should go to Al-Anon. And, of course, my first response was, "I'm not going." And I don't know how I knew this. I don't even know what Al-Anon was at that time. But I said, "I know that's a women's organization, and I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go." So they're going to talk about things that I can't go, and they're going to meet at times that I can't go. You can't work and go to these women's organizations. They meet at 10 o'clock or something like that in the morning. And I went. And, it was rough. It was rough going. And I didn't want to go. And I went, and I can tell you it was exactly what I needed. It was strictly a females organization that I got into. I'm sure there were some men in them, but I never found them, and I looked. I went to Chattanooga a couple times a week, and Huntsville a couple times a week, and I went to the meeting in Scottsboro, and there weren't any men in there. It was all women, but you know, that's really what I needed. I had troubles getting along with women. There wasn't any doubt about that. I had one in treatment, and my mother and I were certainly had great difficulties. And if it hadn't been for these ladies, I wasn't working at the time. I just closed my practice and locked the door. I really wasn't in any kind of shape to work. And they kind of nurtured me and loved me and hugged me. And, you know, if anybody took care of me emotionally, there's about four or five Al-Anon ladies in Chattanooga who took care of me those next few months that I don't believe I would have survived without those ladies. I don't believe it. At least emotionally, I would have died. And, you know, we struggled, and God, they said, you know, I got back to work. They said, "Don't go back too early. Don't go back too early." And, you know, after a period of time, I got off. I was seeing a psychiatrist and was on antidepressants, and I got off the antidepressants, and I remember those ladies cheering. You know, I wasn't taking those drugs anymore, you know. I mean, you know. But, boy, they loved me, and they offered me unconditional love. And I can remember, you know, I really, like I said, it was survival there for a few months. I can remember one time saying my sponsor was a lady. I mentioned last night I didn't know you weren't supposed to have a lady sponsor at that time. And so I asked this lady to sponsor me. She was a wonderful lady who's been up here at a time or so. And she was an AA and Al-Anon. And, boy, she was great for me and just wonderful. And I thought to myself, well, Jenny can love me. Why can't I love myself? You know, I can remember that feeling so strongly. And I think that a little bit helped some way or the other. But Jenny got me into all kinds of things. She introduced me to the Big Book and to John Doe and Emmett Fox and on and fussed and said, "You Almonds, you don't work these steps. Get on that fourth step, you know. And when you get through, you come tell somebody about it." And boy, I mean, she just pushed me around, something awful. And I really love her and appreciate her. You know, I think if I ever had three or four angels in my life, she'd have to be up there at the top of the list, you know, in terms of things. And she, over the next couple of years, it was just wonderful, you know, what all we were able to do and see. And I began to see my part in the thing, you know. One of the things after hearing some of these things, I think sometimes Theta, unlike other alcoholics, will decide that she's responsible for everything that happened in our family, you know. It sort of reminds me that the Al-Anon's basically the caboose back there, you know, and that's sort of the way I saw alcoholics when I first went into medicine. And seeing my grandmother, she was a very passive lady, and I wondered, why in the world does she stay around so long to go through so many of those rough drunks and all the stuff she goes through? Why does she stay around on and on and on and on? But Al-Anon is not a caboose position, not from my point of view. Man, I was up there just pushing just as hard as anybody was up at the very front. And, you know, my insanity was as great as anybody's, if not greater. That psychiatrist, I really knew that he was right. Somehow in my heart, I knew he was right. Really didn't know exactly what I was doing, but I knew he was right. But I started going to Al-Anon, and it was just a simple thing for me. I would have done anything. I was so receptive and so ready. It was just wonderful that they gave me a formula and some steps, and I had friends. I had somewhere to go. I'm not a real social kind of guy. I really like to work, and I'm sort of shy. I can remember back when I was a medical student, I'd think, oh, God, I got to go in there and talk to this next one, you know, and I'd have to push myself to get me in the door to go say, well, now, what's wrong with you, you know? And so I'm not one of these bubbly, outgoing kind of people. I'm much more shy and enjoy probably walking around by myself more than I do anything in the world. And but at any rate, I had a social life now, and that was great. I was going to meetings, and I was going to a lot of meetings, and my blood family thought I had gotten into some kind of a clan or something other. But I really went to a lot of meetings and benefited. I never thought I went to too many meetings either. One of the guys I was working with thought I had replaced some of my addictive behavior with meetings, which is a better alternative, you've got to admit, but you know, I really don't quite agree with that. I knew lots of people who were going to as many meetings as I was in a week and one day, you know, and that made me feel comfortable, you know. And I really appreciate all the things that people shared and how many meetings and things they did go to and what all it meant to me, because they gave me examples. Sometimes they'd just say something. They didn't know that I needed it. I just needed it, and that was exactly, you know, the right thing for me. One of the things that our recovery has done very good over the years, and man, over the first two or three years, I was bouncing around like a new human being. You know, I'd found unconditional love, and I had a social life, and me and the wife were no longer fighting all the time like we were. We weren't in a constant struggle, and man, I was just thrilled with things. I'd found God and didn't even know I needed Him, and found Him anyway, and boy, things were just wonderful. And one day I decided to have a heart attack, and I just couldn't understand how, you know, I read through those promises in the big book, make sure it didn't say in there that you couldn't have a heart attack or you couldn't die or something. They aren't in there, folks, let me tell you. They aren't in there. But we really had a time. Theta likes to tell a story she reminded me of this morning. I haven't thought about it in a long period of time. I was in the university hospital with my heart attack, and they had me leashed down, as you know how they really leash you down. You know, I had three or four things on me and so on. I couldn't move more than about a half a step. And this old head nurse was getting Theta, and Theta turned over at me and said, you know, what can you do? What can you do? And I said, Theta, I'm having my own crisis. You handle this one. My sponsor said that was pure Al-Anon in action right there. Said, you just take this one, lady. I can't handle it. And one of my favorite stories, which I always love to talk about, I almost forgot it, and I just can't believe that. But we'd been in the program 3 or 4 years, and I was really doing good. I'd gone through a fourth step and learned a lot about myself and decided to give up some of that stuff. And we were sitting at the kitchen table, and I told Theta, I said, I'm really beginning to know myself. And she said, yes, what are you finding? I said, I think I may be an asshole. And she said, I've known it all along. Now, that's the kind of emotional support I've got now. And I want to tell you a little bit. Every now and then in Al-Anon, occasionally some newcomer will turn around and look at me and say, I sure wish my husband went too, but both of us in this program would really make a wonderful life, you know. I want to add just a few qualifying statements to that. I'll tell you what intimacy is early in recovery. It's passing in the hall and saying, what meeting are you going to tonight? When you both are going to a lot, and cooperation turns out to be is who's going to watch the kid tonight, you know, so I can go to a meeting. And I've noticed, I've watched some of these folks around here, you know, there's two or three in here, you add up their years and they got 300 years in this program. You know, and I watch them closely. They don't know it, but I watch them closely. You know, when you ask one of them, like you say, Mickey, where is Jim? She says, I don't know. I love it. I've got that. Once I have 30 years of the program, they'll say, where is Thea? I'll say, I don't know. I think we'll get so independent and so okay, you know, with each other, that we can just say, I don't know. I really like that. I learn a lot from these folks, and I really appreciate them so much. Theta mentioned our stepson, too. I won't tell you about that. And we really had a lot of troubles, and we were practicing tough love as best we knew how to do it, and giving him less money or no money. And he had been through a halfway house, and he'd been in a lot of problems. It was real common for us to get a call. He had wrecked a car. He had wound up in the hospital and was okay, and they just wanted to let us know. Or anything where he had to sign in or got a police report, we always got a call. And one night, I guess it was about 11:30 or 12 o'clock, something like that. We'd already gone to bed. We got a call, and the phone just said, are you Eric's father? And I said, yes, I am. And I'll tell you what went through my mind is, here it comes again. And they said, Eric's dead. We want you to come on down and come down and see him, I think is what they said. And I got Theta up, and we went down to the local hospital, and Eric had overdosed accidentally, as best I can tell. I don't believe it was a suicide overdose. It was an accidental overdose, and he was dead. And he'd been dead for some period of time. He'd had some kind of a seizure, and his friends thought he was playing around because he was just full of crap anyway, and he was 16 or 17, somewhere in that range. And he'd been in that cooler for some time by the time we got down there to the Fort Payne Hospital, and it was all over, and they went and got him. And one of the things I like to tell is without anything at all, Theta and I just sort of joined hands and got hold of that boy, and we started praying that prayer like we do in here. And I don't know where that thing came from, but I thought about that a long time, and I don't even know what that means. And, you know, somehow or the other, not long ago, it occurred to me that when the chips are really down, you turn to the thing that you really need the most, you know, and we were turning to this group. And AA helped us bury that boy. We weren't in much recovery at that time. We'd had about 3 years, and we went to church every once in a while. And AA and a bunch of young alcoholics and narcotic addicts, to say it the right way, helped us bury that boy. And boy, do I ever appreciate it. I really appreciate it. And, you know, again, there's none of them promises in there. They're just the things that go by, and it's just an approach to deal with the things that come along in life. In the last 5 years, as Theta said last night, we've raised that boy's son. He and this girl weren't married, and he was born a couple of months after Eric died, and he stayed with us the first week, and he has been a delight for us, you know. Y'all have really helped me with him, too. You know, he prays the serenity prayer for blessing sometimes. He does. And let me tell you, if you ever have him in church and they do the Lord's Prayer, watch out for, keep coming back, you know. If they pray the Lord's Prayer, one of us has got to get close to him, you know, so we can kind of muffle him down a bit. Those church people don't understand that. Keep coming back. I want to thank y'all so much for allowing me to be here and talk and share with me. And I've enjoyed this weekend so much. And, you know, I feel I enjoyed Theda's talk. And, you know, this is something new for me to be at hers. And it was okay. I ask a lot now. She's here at mine, and I'm glad. And I hope I hadn't burned her too bad. I get pretty rough sometimes. And I want to use another thing that she used last night. I don't study the parables, and I sure don't quote Scripture. You know, I don't have anything in common with Scripture quoters. But, you know, I like that fig tree thing. And I don't know how the fig trees do in Israel or in the Middle East, but in North Alabama, they freeze back all the time. And them suckers come back every year. And some years, not every year in North Alabama, they even have fruit on them. Some years they do. They really do. And I really like that parable a lot. I just like to extend it to a little bit further than that. And another thing I really want to ask you is I still need this program. I used to say that I was just that far from being insane again. And you know, I don't know. That it's getting closer and closer. But I really am, and I still need this program so much. And I still go regularly, and I really am grateful there is this program. And at one time on all my kids and my grandkids, I used to just sort of hope that they wouldn't get contaminated by this disease in some sort of way. But let me tell you, folks, they all are. They all are. And I've got a little boy, a little grandchild who's living with me now, who's going to either need AA or Al-Anon in quite a few years. You know, I thought about, you know, you've seen those t-shirts that say the class of 19 ? I need a thing that says AA 19 ? Yeah. And give all the little suckers one and say, you know Theta and I mean if you didn't expect our kids to be crazy as hell, you didn't hear anything we've said, you know. But I really, you know, I am a crackpot. And I want to say that if you can help me keep this thing going, I'd appreciate it. And thanks a lot for listening. Thank you.